2020 Mazda CX-9 is designed to elevate every moment with a sophisticated SUV experience. Stunningly crafted with three-row seating, including second-row captain's chairs. Book a test drive at Mazda.ca.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Make real changes today. This is Flipping the Switch with Suze Casey.
Hi, and welcome. You're listening to Contact Talk Radio, and I'm Suze Casey. We're flipping the switch today on just a really interesting topic. Some of you know that I have a background that I'm really actually passionate about music, and I have a lot of friends who are singer-songwriters, and I have one joining me today who I'll be introducing to you in just a few minutes. But we're going to be talking about some pretty universal themes, about living from your heart, about what are your intentions, intentional living, mindful living, and introducing you to some music that you may not have heard before, but I know if you like the show, you're going to love this music because Joe is one of my favorite songwriters. So we're going to be talking about that in just a minute. Before we do, I'd just like to talk to you a little bit about what's the word for today. And so we always choose a word to have us guide our day. And let's just pick one now. Let's go for inventive. So today's word, inventive. And so how can you be more inventive? Where have you been inventive? And one of the ways I'm being inventive is by having a friend on the show with me today. So let's dive in and talk a little bit about the music and the songs, and we're going to play some songs for you. But before that, let's introduce you to my friend. This is Joe Jenks.
Hey, Suze. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you coming in today and having a chat with me. Been following your music for a long time and love what you do, love the messages that you do. And I know that our audience may not be all that familiar with you, so I want to give them a little bit of background. Based in Chicago.
Yep, based in Chicago.
Singer-songwriter. Do you consider yourself a folkie?
Yes, although the music tent that I sort of hang under is broader than that. I very much am a folkie at heart, acoustic music, roots music, traditional folk styles from different parts of the world are very foundational in my musical perspective.
And really, been doing a lot of things in terms of, spiritual music as well, although not capital C Christian, but spiritual and very much the heart-centered kind of messages in your work, and always have been that, and story songs, but story songs that lead us back to what it means to be a human being.
Lead us back into our heart.
Yeah. And I think that's why I love your stuff, because it touches me in a place that's really real. How long you been playing your art?
I'm in my early 40s, and I've been making music professionally since I was 14. When I first started playing out in clubs, my mom had to come with because you had to be over 21 to get into a lot of the clubs. And so I had to have adult chaperones come with me to bring me out to, gigs that I had. And you had to get work permits if you were under 16 and working for money in the state that I grew up in. So I had to get special permits that allowed me to work for money. And it was, when a lot of my friends were flipping burgers at fast food places in our teen years, I was out playing music on the weekends, and it was great. And, I've played a lot of different kinds of music over the years, and went to conservatory, studied opera and studied jazz and studied musical theater and did a lot of things. But, folk music and the singer-songwriter traditions, the balladeer, the storyteller, and I think a little bit of the prophetic voice, the one that stands and says, hey, folks, maybe there's another way we could look at this. I think that tradition within music has always been of interest to me. Whether you go back to Billie Holiday singing Strange Fruit about lynchings in the South in the United States, or, the sort of, social advocacy music of the 60s and 70s, or, wherever you look, there really is this deep tradition of singer-songwriters and balladeers and folk musicians sort of being the voice of conscience at times for our collective world. And those are the artists who spoke very deeply to me and were some of my biggest mentors, among them Pete Seeger, who I listened to Pete's records when I was growing up. And he really mixed a very positive message, spiritual songs. He drew from all over the world. And even though people equate him as a protest singer, Pete actually didn't sing about what he was against. He sang about what he was for.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the...
And it's an extraordinary difference that really needs to be made.
Yes.
There's a real difference between singing about what you're against and singing about what you're for.
And thank you for bringing that up, because listeners to my show know that what I talk about is don't speak of what you don't want. Speak of what you do want. You know, because so often they'll say, you know, what do you want? Well, I don't want to be frustrated. I don't want to be angry. Great. What do you want? Do you want to be peaceful? Do you want to be joyful? What do you want? Speak of that. And, you know, that's what the repatterning work is all about, is how do you train that subconscious mind to do that for you? And so often I have people say to me, you know, how do you stay so positive? And I say, well, I have my list of things that always do it for me. And, you know, some that might be a cup of peppermint tea from my garden. It might be talking to one of my grandbabies. It's a list of songs that I have and artists that I have that I know I can plug in. And it's not about sunshine lollipops. It's about, it's really about, this is the way it is. And this is the way it could be. And here's maybe a pathway we can take to get there.
Yeah.
And it's not about pretending everything's okay when it's not. And so, you know, it's one of the things that I get sometimes is people say, oh, you're, you know, positive self-talk expert. And, you know, you have to pretend everything. I can't say anything's wrong. And I'm like, no, let's say it's real. But now what are we going to do about it?
Right. Let's be solution focused rather than problem focused.
Yeah. And you know, I think our media tends to do the, you know, here's what's wrong and here's what's horrible and here's what's bad. And one of the questions I like to ask is, you know, what went right today? You know, I hear you had a tough day, but what went right? And so your music is one of the things that I have, you know, on my dial in when I need a little thing to bring me forward and up. And yeah.
That's sweet.
And I'm really excited because I know you're in Calgary playing. We're doing this as a pre-record, and I don't know when this is going to go to air, but you're in Calgary with me, you, even though you're based in Chicago, playing at the club that I am the promoter for, Calgary Folk Club, tonight. And, you know, for those of you who are going, I've never heard of this kind of music. It's not mainstream, although we think it should be. It's quite grassroots.
It's definitely underground in places. And what's interesting to me, I know you have listeners in the United States and in Canada, is that while there are certainly pockets of folk and singer-songwriter in the United States, something happened in the 70s and early 80s in the music industry in the United States where this kind of music really was driven underground. And that never really happened in Canada. Mm-hmm. Folk and acoustic music remained a viable, popular musical form coast to coast in Canada. And so it's always very interesting to come up here and play because we play for audiences here. I play for audiences here that are just even more literate sometimes and more aware of the breadth and depth of acoustic music that exists.
Mm-hmm. So if people are listening, where can they go to find... I mean, obviously, they can go to your website, which will give the joejenks.com.
Yeah, joejenks.com.
And, you know, but they can also find it. Almost every town has some kind of acoustic music going on, or singer-songwriter, or something.
Yes, certainly some of the larger, you know, some of the smaller towns, maybe not, but certainly, you know, a lot of places even just have a pub or a bar or, you know, a small club that does an open mic night, and singer-songwriters will show up and do their thing.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe Google singer-songwriters and the name of your town and find out where you can find some of that. Because there's usually a grassroots movement of musicians and people that are writing things that are, you know, more than Baby, Baby, I Love You.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But it's a nice little segue into the first song that we're going to play. I want to chat about it for a little bit, and then we'll let listeners have a go at it. But Love is the Reason. And so this is a love song, but it's a love song when you're talking about that different perspective that comes at it from a kind of a slightly different, hey, let's look at it from this perspective. And so, you know, let's kind of where did that come from? Or,
you know, so interestingly enough, you've mentioned love songs and spiritual stuff, and I was living in Cincinnati, Ohio for a while, and I was sitting on my couch, and I had, for the first time in almost a year, dedicated a day when I was stationary and didn't have, you know, 100 other commitments, to just sit with my instrument and write. And there were some struggles going on in my primary relationship, in my marriage, and I wanted to speak to that and sing to that. And I wasn't really sure how to get around it. And then this woman came to the door, and she, from the look of her, it was very clear that it was her intent to speak to me about her religion and her faith. And I really wanted to ignore her. And I thought, you know, being gracious and being loving is about giving the best that we have to give and allowing others to give to us what they have to give. Even if we don't ideologically agree, if someone has taken time out of their life, out of their work, out of their other responsibilities to walk around the neighborhood, meet their neighbors, speak to things that matter to them, they are giving of themselves and trying to be of service in the way that most matters to them or that most speaks to their heart. And so we don't have to speak the same spiritual language to receive the intent of that gift lovingly. Mm-hmm. And so I opened the door, and she indeed, you know, asked me questions about whether or not I, you know, felt like I was saved. And, you know, and we got into a conversation, and I asked her about community work and asked if her church was participating in the soup kitchen that a bunch of the churches in the neighborhood were participating in. And, you know, we had some dialogue. And then I went back to writing the song, and I was reminded of, you know, from being a kid in Sunday school, I was reminded of one of my favorite stories out of Christian scripture. Excuse me. Which is where, you know, the fishermen, Jesus' disciples, have been out all night fishing. They were up early, and maybe not all night, but they were up early in the morning to catch the, you know, the great time at dawn when the fish are most active. And they got nothing to show for it. And they come back to shore discouraged. And Jesus says, well, did you try casting your nets on the other side of the boat? And I lived in Seattle for years. I lived around commercial fishermen. I'm telling you that the way that Christian scripture tells the story from that point on is not how it went down. Like, you know, you get in the business of a bunch of commercial fishermen who've been out for hours doing their work and have nothing to show for it, and ask them a stupid question like, did you try putting the nets down on the other side of the boat? And they're not going to say, oh, gosh, we didn't think of that.
What a great idea.
They're going to have a lot of words for you, and none of them will be polite.
And the phrase will end, and the horse you rode in on.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. You know, like, this is not going to go in the polite way that it says, but they do. They say, well, he's our teacher. He knows things we don't know. The job of faith is to risk something, even when empirical evidence suggests that you might not get what you want. But if you've nothing to lose by trying, why not try? That's the risk of faith, whatever your belief system, that's the risk of faith. And so they go out and they put their nets back in the water. And they come up with a load of fish, the likes of which none of them have ever seen. And it's a moment when they all realize that there is more possible than they have been allowing their mind and their heart to conceive of.
Yeah.
And so I realized in my marriage that there was probably more possible than I was letting myself conceive of. And I needed to put my nets back in the water, even though I felt like I had done everything that I could possibly do to make the relationship work and function, that I needed to take that leap of faith and put my nets back in the water. And so it was kind of ironic that a woman that I was really trying to avoid, because it felt like she was distracting me from doing my songwriting, inadvertently planted the seed that got me into the mindset and the heart space that I needed to be in to write this song. Excuse me.
I was going to mention that, you know, when you said that, and the doorbell rang, and I was going to say, and there was a woman there, I was going to say, did she have wings on?
Yeah,
you know, the muse often shows up that way. It's just kind of like, I don't know what to do. And then bing bong, something happens.
Yeah, so. Well, the line that it inspired then was, I think it's time we finally take our chances and let our hearts speak louder than our fears.
And I love that line. And before we go to the song, I'm going to do a little repattern work with it. And so I'm just going to, you can go along with us if you want to, Joe, or, but listeners know that I say a statement and then I'll say it again and they can repeat it back. So I forgive myself for believing that I need to let my fear speak. I forgive myself for believing that I need to let my fear speak and breathe it in through the nose and out through the mouth. I'm tired of living from my fear. It's not getting me what I want. I'm tired of living from my fear. It's not giving me what I want. And breathe it in and let it go. I give my heart permission to speak up and be louder than my fears. I give my heart permission to speak up and be louder than my fears. And breathe it in and let it go. So we've done the forgiveness stage, which is where you would just kind of acknowledge what is, the permission where you open to something new. And then the next stage is choice. I can listen to my fears or I can listen to my heart. I can't listen to both at the same time. I choose to listen to my heart. I can listen to my fears or I can listen to my heart. I can't do both at the same time. And so I choose to listen to my heart and breathe it in. And that's what I call getting to the line, okay? Because now you're in a place where your conscious mind can think again when you get to the line. When you're in that pit place where you were with your marriage, you don't have any creative thought about how something else might be possible because you're just in a survival mode. When we're below the line, when our energy is low, we're below the line, we don't have access to that creativity. And so the repatterning work is about getting you to the line and over the line and training the subconscious mind to do it for you. Because I don't know about you, but when I'm in that place, I'm not, it's kind of like you're talking about the fishermen. They're like, you know, really, you want me to try the other side? Come on. So if I can get my subconscious mind to do that little pathway for me and get me to the other side, then I have access.
Yeah. So there's a line in here. Well, the sage said to the fishermen on the boat, cast your nets on the other side. And with nothing short of astonishment on their faces, they said, don't you think we tried?
Yeah. Hello. Yeah. And so that's the conscious mind will come in and go, but all the empirical evidence says, and I've tried it a billion times, blah, 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 blah. So that's why I decided to train the subconscious mind to do it for me. So I didn't even have to deal with that conscious mind going, show me the money, honey.
Well, I mean, just from a sort of a craftsman standpoint, a craftsperson standpoint, I'm disinclined to think that it would have been a fisherman's instinct to take advice from a carpenter.
Yeah. Yeah, think. Yeah, what for you know about the water? Yeah, and yet oftentimes we need to get that observational place that's outside of what we know, and so it actually does make sense to have the carpenter say, "What about this?" Because it's when you're not immersed, you know, and becoming that observer for yourself is sometimes hard. So let's do the rest of the repatterning, and then we're going to jump into the song. So the next three stages are freedom, where we try it on. So I am free to let my heart speak louder than my fears.
I'm free to let my heart speak louder than my fears.
And breathe it in. And I often say if we can give a specific example. So, you know, you may want to think of a specific time coming up in the next day or so where that would be advantageous to you. So I'm going to use, I'm free to let my heart speak louder than my fears in the board meeting this afternoon. So I would encourage everybody who's listening, just fill in your own situation that's a specific so that you actually know that, you know, you've got a time that your subconscious mind is going, okay, we're focusing in, we're going to do it here. So I am free to let my heart speak louder than my fears and give a specific example. And then breathe it in. The next stage is the affirmation stage, and it's when you let your heart speak louder than your fear. And I'm going to use the example that you're giving in the song. Okay, so I know what it's like to let my heart speak louder than my fears. I did it when I wrote that song. I know what it's like to let my heart speak louder than my fears. I did it when I wrote that song. Yeah. And listeners, you want to come up with a time that you've done it. So you wanted to mention something there, or?
No. I'm
you're processing,
you know,
it.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm just thinking about what you observe from the song, because I have my own observations as a writer, but it's interesting to receive your perspectives on what's there.
I put everything into repatterning. You know, that's the way my mind
goes. Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know. We don't know what the outcome will be, but very early on in my career, I was getting very frustrated, and one of my sisters sent me a letter. And it was a short letter. It was mostly encouragement. But she has a phrase, sort of a mantra, that she says to herself. And she wanted to share it with me at a time when she felt like it was important. And the mantra, the phrase was this: I cannot control the outcome. I can only control my effort.
Nice. So let's do that one again. I cannot
control the outcome. I can only control my effort.
Yeah, that's lovely. There's a wonderful, you know, getting back to fishermen and water and sailing, there's a wonderful one, and I cannot remember who said it now. I can see it on my bulletin board, but I can't see who it was by, because this is about 25 years ago. I had it on my bulletin board, and it said, I cannot control the wind. I can, however, adjust my sail.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
and
same
so
thing.
You know, it's the same idea, is that the wind is like galing around you. You're a good sailor, and you can adjust your sail the right way. Boing! That big gale is going to take you places. And if you're sitting in the doldrums and there's nothing happening, it doesn't matter how effective you are. You aren't going to get anywhere unless you change up your attitude and find that place where things are. So we're working for you. So great. So we're just going to do the last part of the repatterning, which is the surrender statement. I am learning to speak from my heart, and it feels, and then fill in the blank. I am learning to speak from my heart, and it feels
energizing.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it feels energizing. It feels free. It feels like there's more room for breath in my lungs.
Yeah. And when there's more room for breath in your lungs, your brain works better and you get all kinds of cool creative ideas. So I'm speaking with Joe Jenks, who's one of my favorite singer-songwriters, and other singer-songwriters that I love who are listening. Just know I have lots of favorites. but Joe's with me right now, and we're going to listen to his song, Love is the Reason. So this is Joe Jenks.
There was a time when all I ever needed was your smile. Drive away my rain. But now it seems that hopeful light is hiding behind a cloud of anger and pain. I thought everything I was looking for was right here within my reach. I think it's time we finally take our chances and let our hearts speak louder than our fears, because love is all I ever wanted. Love is the reason I'm still here. Well, the sage said to the fisherman on the boat, cast your nets on the other side. And with nothing short of astonishment on their faces, they said, don't you think we'd try? And he said, what if everything you're looking for is right there within your reach? I think it's time finally take our chances and let our hearts speak louder than our fears, because love is all I ever wanted. Love is the reason I'm still here. I don't know where our story goes from here. Too many pages left unread. How to carve a pathway through this labyrinth we've built, with all that's left unserved. Love is all I ever wanted.
So that is Love is the Reason, Joe Jenks, who's here with me today. We're talking about his music and his writing process and where some of the stuff comes from. You can find out more about Joe on his website, Joe Jenks. That's J-O-E-J-E-N-K-C-K-S. I knew I was going to do that. Let's try it again from the top. J-O-E-J-O-J. Let's try that again. J-O-E-J-E-N-C-K-S.com. I should have just let you do it because you do it really well. Thanks so much for the song. And I love the ending, the progression, which that love is all I ever wanted. Love is all you ever wanted. Love is all we ever wanted. And I think that people remember that's just what, you know, what we want. Like, no, nobody wants to argue. Nobody wants to have a nasty place at home. Nobody wants to have a harsh work environment. So all we all want is just kind of that peaceful place. And that whole notion that all we want, the reason that we're here is love. And I also love the line, what if everything you're looking for is right there within your reach? I think so often we think that we have to wait till tomorrow or wait until we lose 10 pounds or wait until the stars align or whatever. And it actually is there if we can only become in that observational place. So we're going to talk with Joe a little bit more after the break. We're going to take a quick little station break. I'm Suze Casey. You're listening to Flipping the Switch on CTR Network. And I'm here with Joe Jenks, and we'll be back in two.
My gran used to say, a penny for your thoughts, and you know that a mindful daily practice is effective, but who has the time? What if there was a simple, practical, and profound way to focus your subconscious mind? 365 Repattern is an app that sends you a focus word and a positive thought every day, 365 days. Based on my book, Belief Repatterning, the amazing technique for flipping the switch to positive thoughts, 365 Repattern, you can get it at your app store, Android or iPhone. Your thoughts are worth it, and I'm Suze Casey reminding you. You've learned it, now live it. You've read the books and studied the theories, but the practical application is hanging you up. Are you tired of beating yourself up for not living what you know to be true? This is Suze Casey, and I invite you to integrate your learning through easy-to-practice exercise found in my book, Belief Repatterning, the amazing technique for flipping the switch to positive thought. It's available through hayhouse.com or your local bookstore. Hi, this is Suze Casey, and I'm passionate about helping people flip the switch to positive thoughts. And through Belief Repatterning, I'll support you. I invite you to sign up for my newsletter on suzecasey.com. That's SUZECASEY.com. You can also order an autographed copy of Belief Repatterning, find out about individualized coaching with me, or join one of my online courses. Know you can and will repattern anything you choose. suzecasey.com.
Make real changes today. This is Flipping the Switch with Suze Casey.
Welcome back. You're listening to CTR Network, and I'm Suze Casey. We're flipping the switch, getting that mind over onto the positive side by training the subconscious mind to do it for you. And I have often said that who we are is a product of what we read, the people we connect with, the music we listen to, the movies that we watch. And I'm often a little bit concerned when I hear some of the stuff that we allow to go into our subconscious minds that just kind of spins around in there, and always astounded at some of the stuff that sits there that's been there for 50 years for me or more that just triggers and up it pops. And so I've been very conscious as an adult about the kind of music that I listen to, and singer-songwriters and the folk music scene and the spiritual world, where it makes a difference about that kind of the consciousness that we speak of and what we imbue ourselves with and sing over and over again really gets into our fibers. And so really glad to have, as a friend and acquaintance and somebody here with me, Joe Jenks. He's a real good pal of mine. We just love spending time together and having great conversations. It's actually kind of interesting to have a conversation in the daylight, because often these conversations happen at the end of the evening after a show in some hotel somewhere in a hallway. Yeah.
It's also somewhat novel to be doing it in person, to have the blessing of an in-person conversation. So many of our conversations happen over the phone with me out on the road somewhere and you here in Calgary.
So. Yeah. So great to have you here, and thanks for coming in and doing this. So you were telling me a story earlier, and I'd like to kind of touch back in on it, about your travels yesterday.
Yeah. So, I travel around throughout the United States and throughout Canada. I've been to the Caribbean. I've been to Central America. I've been to Ireland. And more international travels planned over the arc of the next year. I'll be heading to the United Arab Emirates and Oman and India.
Oh, cool.
Headed to the UK. Probably going to hit a couple other places. Going to Wales for the first time.
You got lots of frequent flyer points happening there.
You know, one of the things that I notice is that every culture has its own way of doing the business of society, of doing the work of society. And so in the United States, there's a culture that has evolved that's very very succinct. It not necessarily rude, but very abrupt at times from my instinct. And when I come into Canada, whether I drive in or fly in, I find that there's sort of an undercurrent of people more interested in doing a thing right than doing it fast. And that also seems to relate to the way that people connect to each other, even in the most impersonal of process, somebody checking a passport and looking at travel documents. And you know, there's just this undercurrent that I find here that is very intriguing to me, because it seems to presume competence. It presumes decency. It presumes that you are here for good purpose. And there's so many other places where I go where people give you, you know, like the third degree with every question that they're asking, because the presumption is that you're up to something. Their assumption is that somebody's trying to get one over on them. And that negativity is something that the older I get, the more sensitive I become to it, in part because I've traveled in different places where it was greater or lesser, even just within the United States. And of course, it's very, very different. The West Coast of Canada is very different than the East Coast. It's very different. I mean, every province, every city has its own culture and its own attitude. But there is nationally a culture in Canada that is, I think, much more respectful in its civil dialogue. I don't necessarily mean politicians on the news. I mean the way that people – you walk into the post office to post a letter, and the way that people greet you. Mm-hmm. There's just an assumption of you're dealing with a whole human being, and that person has all these experiences and all of these things that they're going through, and your interaction is just a little snapshot in the middle of your day. But, you know, I had a wonderful conversation with a woman from the from Revenue Canada, from the Canadian Revenue Service, tax service. And she was so kind and so polite, and she sort of had to gently admonish me on something I had done incorrectly. And then she apologized for having to admonish me. And I was like, you are so by your rights to call me out on this. I did this incorrectly, and now I'll know better next time. And it was absolutely appropriate that you would give me that little kind of teaching moment. But do it in a way that was not you're a bad person because you made a mistake, that it came with the assumption you are a good person who made a mistake.
Yes, and that's a whole
and
different
so I
mindset.
Just wonder, like, when we talk about belief repatterning, when we talk about, I mean, it's easy to say, I want to lose weight, I want to quit smoking, I want to do this, I want to go here, I want to have this or this thing. But fundamentally, I think on the deepest level, and part of where the work that you do and the work that I do crosses into this great common space, is that the work of belief repatterning is fundamentally transformative work in society. It's about changing the way that we look, so that rather than seeing a background of no with the occasional yes, what we see is a background of yes with the occasional no.
Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful, I'm sure you're familiar with Alan Cohen, great, maybe not, he's a long time personal development writer, has been writing since like the 60s. And he has a quote that I love, and it is, the power of no is the yes that it holds the space for.
Interesting idea.
And so that you only use no because it's creating a space for a bigger yes.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, when you look at the United States, you look at Canada, you look at countries whose history is full of immigration, is mm-hmm. full of talent coming from all over the planet to be here. There is such an immense benefit to that wealth of talent and knowledge and experience sort of commingling in a place in creating new ideas and innovations. Our word for the day was inventive,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Creating new things. And so it isn't just about, can I repattern my belief system to think, can I lose weight or can I find the love of my life or can I build the career I want? It's like, can we figure out how to solve homelessness? Mm-hmm. Can we figure out how to challenge our accepted ideas of poverty? Can we figure out how to challenge wasteful use of resources so that we can preserve the resources that we have for our children, our grandchildren, for lots of other generations? And so I think it's important to look at this stuff on the inner level. I mean, the transformation begins within, but the journey doesn't really continue if it stops within.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's, you know what I mean? Like, if it's mm-hmm. just about, oh, I want a better job, then that's, it's like, no, I want to change the fact that I have at some point in my life believed the limiting messages that people told me. You know, when I was growing up, nobody asked me if I wanted to be a touring musician by profession. It was like, oh, do you want to be a garbage collector? Do you want to be a policeman or a fireman? Or it was like all,
Tinker,
you know,
jailer, soldier, spy.
I grew up in a working class town and those were jobs that people knew and understood. And, you know, nobody said, do you want to be an astronaut? You know, you know, which I did, you know, like I wanted to be an astronaut. Being a folk singer was a pragmatic second choice.
You know? Well, and it's interesting because, you know, gosh, there's like 60 million things as ever when I speak with you, Joe, that I want to follow up on. But the one that I really, it's the intentional place. Like, you are living a passion. You are, as I am, you know, and I feel, I don't know about you, but I feel so blessed every day when I get up and I go, I get to do what I do. Like, yay, how fun is this? Because, you know, people, I was asked last month, I was in Australia and I was asked, you know, do you plan on retiring to Australia? Because I really love it there. Because I feel like I fit there in a way, like I feel like I fit here in Canada, but even more so because I think the weather is just nicer. they got pretty flowers. But I thought, you know, I can't imagine myself retiring because I don't have a job. I have a passion that I get to live every day that supports a lifestyle that I'm enjoying and creating. And I think that's, you know, I often talk to people about, you know, doing what makes your heart sing and doing, following a passion. When did you know that being a musician was your passion?
You know, I grew up steeped in a lot of traditional Irish music and traditional Appalachian folk styles, as well as, you know, like my mom was really big into big band music and she'd seen Gene Krupa when she was in high school and that left a big impression on her. And for those that don't know Gene Krupa, he's like the most legendary drummer of the big band era and had his own band for years. You know, so I grew up with a lot of musical diversity, but then I was about 8 years old and my sister Jean, brought a Pete Seeger record into the house for me as a gift. And it really changed my focus. And I would lay on the floor with one speaker on either side of my head because my mom didn't want the music too loud in the house. You know,
this is so before headphones.
Well, they had headphones. We just didn't have enough money to have them.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it was lucky we had a stereo. Yeah. And I would lay on the floor early in the morning and I would listen to these songs and these stories from all over the planet. And I wanted to go there. I wanted to meet those people. I wanted to know who they were and how they thought and how things worked for them. And, it, you know, like I never would have dared to dream as a child that I would grow up to know Pete Seeger and sing with him and perform mm-hmm. with him and have mm-hmm. dialogue
have
and
with him, right?
conversations with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was early in my career. That was a big aha moment when I realized that the world was not as big and insurmountable as I thought it was. Because if I could go from being a kid who was laying on the floor listening to Pete Seeger records to a guy who was standing on stage singing with Pete in the span of, you know, 15 or 18 years, imagine what can
possible.
Be accomplished over a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I knew pretty early, I was probably 12 years old. It was maybe 4 years after I got my first you know, Pete Seeger record, and put that in the mix of all the other music I knew, that I, you know, I stood up at the dinner table and declared, and I'm the youngest of seven kids in my family, so there was, it was an assembly there, and I stood up in front of the assembled body and declared my intent to grow up and be a folk singer.
And at 12 years
old? At 12,
old.
You know.
Oh, wow.
And I, you know, I'm sure my mom thought that it was cute and that I probably changed my mind 100 times before it really mattered. And I'm pretty sure my dad thought that was a contradiction in terms, that sooner or later I was going to have to choose between growing up or becoming a folk singer.
I was born, you have to pick one or the other. Yeah. Yeah. You don't get to do both.
So, you know, I feel like I've done a reasonable job of choosing both being grown up and being a folk singer, but it's an interesting journey because it's a world in which I come to understand that intent matters, that even if we don't accomplish a thing exactly the way we thought we would, that the heart space and the head space that we bring into it matter. And that at the end of the day, it's probably more important to be loving than it is to be perfect. It's more important to be generous than it is to, you know, try and hang on tightly to what we've created. And I think that's the difference that I was trying to speak to a little bit about what I experience in different cultures as I travel around the world, is that there are different sort of social mores that govern how people relate to each other. But I think it's really important to see each other as fully human. So look at the person that you're dealing with that just, you know, put a cup of coffee on your table and disappears, not as a two-dimensional image that is there and gone, but as a three-dimensional, fully dimensional human being. And it's hard to dismiss people when we see them that way. It's hard to dismiss an individual. It's hard to dismiss a category. I mean, we look around the world, we see what happens when an entire category of people is dismissed, whether it's Jews in Nazi Germany, whether it's, you know, refugees in Darfur province, whether whatever it is, you know, like the Armenian genocide, we can look at the most horrific examples of what happens. First peoples at times in Canada, indigenous peoples in the United States who were seen not as fully human, not as fully valid.
Mm-hmm.
And
or maybe seen as fully human, but seen as potential scary,
yeah.
potential enemy, potential that, you know, I'm thinking yeah. of concentration camps and during the war of civilian concentration camps that,
yeah.
you know, these people were doing nothing other than growing crops and having babies and
yeah,
living a life.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden they're behind barbed wire because they're perceived that they might
yeah.
be a problem.
So there's something about seeing each other as fully dimensional and then respecting that
mm-hmm.
that changes the tone. And I see in different places, just workplace to workplace. I'll go into a grocery store and all the employees are grumpy. And I'll go, hey, you know, I know something about their boss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll go into a grocery store where everybody's happy and joyful. And I'm like, okay, these people are well paid. They're well treated. They're happy to come to work. You know, mm-hmm. so it doesn't have to be, you know, writ large in terms of national identity. It just the subcultures within that can change and evolve.
And we all have the choice.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that that, you know, if it's a grumpy place, I can ungrumpy it. You know, you can ungrumpy it. And anybody
nice.
Who's listening can ungrumpy
nice.
just by choice.
Yeah.
You know, it's just,
so
it's that intention. What do you want?
Yeah. So this song that we're going to go into here in a moment is one that I wrote thinking about intentions again with my beloved, with my spouse. Her name is Lynn. And I was just thinking about the arc of our lives and our time together on this planet. And we have some little chunk of property down in Washington State in the mountains. And there's nothing there. It's just a stand of trees. And we hold the deed to it. But it's a place we visit. And in our time there, I always feel potential.
Mm.
I feel possibility emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this song was about just trying to find a way to live, not as an occasional thing, but live as a daily thing from that place of possibility and that gentle place of knowing, you know, as Julian of Norwich put it so well, all will be well.
Mm-hmm.
All manner of things will
mm-hmm.
be well.
All shall be well. And all is now and forever well. I love that. That's how I live. It's like, it's all good. I might not recognize it right now, but it is all good. So I really appreciate you coming in. We're going to let your song take us out. All I Want is a Garden. I've been talking with Joe Jenks, JoeJenks.com. If you want to find more of his music, he also plays with a group called Brother Son. I suggest that you check both of those out. That's Brother as in not sister and Son as in not moon. Brother Son. And I'm Suze Casey. You're listening to CTR Network. Flipping the switch, and I'm just reminding you that you can and will, and in fact probably are, just by listening to this song, repatterning anything you choose. Cast your net on the other side of the boat. We'll talk to you next week. Take care. Thanks, Joe, for being here.
Thanks, Suze.
My father was a soldier, went off to the war. Whatever childhood dreams he had, they were gone forevermore. The solace and the meaning that he found within his life, for his faith, his home, his family, and his one true love and wife. All I want is a garden to make the flowers grow. All I want is you beside me in the gentle evening glow. All I want is a peaceful place where I can lay my head, and when the weary night embraces, to lay beside you in our bed. Now I'm a road musician, and I wouldn't trade a day. I've spent running down my dreams, making friends along the way. Now and then I get to thinking that he had it right. You just give everything you have to love and hold on to the light. All I want is a garden to make the flowers grow. All I want is you beside me in the gentle evening glow. All I want is a peaceful place where I can lay my head, and when the weary night embraces, to lay beside you in our bed. Gentle evening glow. All I want is a peaceful place where I can lay my head, and when the weary night embraces, to
to lay beside you in our bed. All I want is a garden.
The 2020 Mazda CX-9 is designed to elevate every moment with a sophisticated SUV experience. Stunningly crafted with three-row seating, including second-row captain's chairs. Book a test drive at Mazda.ca.